If you would please look up the book of Amos. Please find the book of Amos. Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum. That's the wrong direction. Amos, Obadiah, Jonah. That's the right direction. Two books back. Okay. Now, I want to try to do something slightly different in this hour than I did in the first hour. And I noticed that you have an electronic device, and you have an electronic device, and you have an electronic device, and you maybe some of the rest of you do. If you have an electronic device, what I'd like you to do is go to a search engine, maybe Google, go to Google Images, and see if you can get a map of the Holy Land, the map of Palestine. In the days of the prophets. Now, what I have here is I have such an image. Okay, I have such an image. See it here. What I like to do is reproduce this crudely on the board. If there's anybody who has a better artistic talent than I do, maps in the back of the Bible, that could work. That could work very well. You got some. Okay. So what I'm going to try to do, if I can, is put a map up here, and let's see what I can do.
You want an ancient one, or you want a cruise ship type?
No, I want the one from that. So, if I start, I've got kind of a coastline, kind of like that. And then out here is the Mediterranean Sea. So far, okay? This little spot right here is roughly where Mount Carmel is. Okay. And there is over here, might be about there, and then down here. See, how far down shall I go? Maybe this far. Okay, Sea of Galilee, Dead Sea, Jordan River. Now, what I'd like to do is start about here and go kind of like that. And then down here, go across like this, down here, and then around the lake, out like that, and out a little bit, back down, it's kind of like that. Over here, there is a country, more or less here, and then there's a country, and it's right away there. There's another one. Starts about here, and goes down like that. So far, okay? Mm-hmm. Okay. This up here is Phoenicia. P-H-O-E. Phoenicia. This. All of that is Arab. This is Ammon. This is Moab. This is Edom. This is Philistia. This is Judah. So far, okay. And about here is Jerusalem. And there is a trade route that comes sort of like this and goes up like that. What's the other end of that trade route? This one going south.
Egypt.
Very good. Egypt. What's at the end of the trade route? Way over here. Depends on when you are.
But for this particular time, the time of Amos, that's Assyria, whose capital city or whose major cities include? What did we just study in Jonah?
Nineveh.
So is this post-Nineveh, or post-Jonah, or pre-Jonah?
Probably a little bit pre, but I don't know how much pre.
No,
I don't really know.
In the middle.
Do you have
Samaria? Is that Samaria?
Yes.
Well, you notice I haven't put anything in the middle. I haven't put anything in the middle yet. That's part of the point.
Do you have Jonah before Amos in that timeline?
No, I have Jonah as one of the first ones we talk about because I have a question mark. We don't exactly know where exactly to put Jonah. Probably before 721, which is the Assyrian captivity.
But Barbara just asked if he was, that Amos was before Jonah. And
I said, I don't know.
Okay.
I said, I don't know. We talked about Jonah first because we really don't know exactly where to date him. Okay. All right, now, if you look now at the book of Amos, if you were here last week, this is review. If you were not here last week, then this is for you. So this is at least for you.
Thank you.
Okay. Can you share a Bible with him? Because
he doesn't want to.
Try again.
He's got it memorized. Go
ahead. Try again. Okay.
You got a magnifying glass?
I do. It's at home, and I wish I had it with me.
No, I'm good.
Okay, look at chapter 1. Amos was not from the brotherhood of prophets. He was from the brotherhood of shepherds. What does that mean? That means he was a country boy. That means he was used to living alone with his sheep. And where was God about to send him? You don't know by reading verse 1. You don't know by reading verse 1. But God was getting ready to send him to the big cities in the middle of this map. In fact, to the one big city in the middle of this map. That's where he was headed. If you look a little bit at the message of Amos, now I'm talking about the whole nine chapters, I think it is, of Amos. If you look at the message, what you find is the message is from a country boy to the city. Somebody who's used to being direct, talking to somebody who's used to being devious. And his message is, number one, the corruption of city life. Number two, social injustice rampant. Deceit in politics and in religion. And insincerity in both civil actions and in religious acts. That's an important enough list. Let me say it again. This is a country boy come to the city. How much do country boys get listened to in the city? Generally, not so much.
Ridiculed.
Not so much. Corrupt city life, social injustice, deceit in politics and in religion, and insincerity in civil actions and in religious acts. God is sending him to address those things. And his primary focus is in the middle of this map where I haven't put in the identification yet, other than Mount Carmel. Pause for just a minute. As long as I'm talking about Mount Carmel, I do need to mention Mount Hermon is up here near this road. And it turns out that's going to be important. Mount Hermon is up here on this road. When I talked about social injustice in the first hour, I talked a little bit about a fellow who came to the university to speak a week ago Friday. The guy's name was Joe D. Simone, and I don't think I've told you about him before. I might have said something last week to one or two of you, but I don't think I said anything in public. Joe D. Simone is interesting in a number of different ways. Chemistry department brings in a number of speakers every year, and one of those is always the biggest one we can find. This is a guy who is one of two people in the world who is simultaneously a member of the National Academy of Science, the National Academy of Medicine, the National Academy of Engineering. Two people in the world have had that distinction. He's one of the two.
He is a full professor of chemistry at the University of North Carolina. He is also a full professor of chemical engineering at North Carolina State. He's a full professor of chemistry at North Carolina and, at the same time, a full professor of chemical engineering at North Carolina State. That happened because he was originally at North Carolina, realized the research he was doing required collaboration with an engineering school, and the University of North Carolina is one of two of the top 25 research institutions in the country, research universities in the country, that does not have an engineering program. And he was about to leave. And so they worked this thing out 17 miles away. They worked this thing out where, okay, you collaborate with North Carolina State and we will all celebrate what you're doing. So you go to the University of North Carolina, you'll find his webpage. You go to North Carolina State, you'll find his webpage. He's got a research group at both places. He has started 5 companies since he's been working. And in his conversation, he said, a lot of our early work was funded by the National Science Foundation. And I consider that we incurred an obligation, a very deep, important obligation. The people who pay taxes in the United States, some of them work like dogs and have to give up things to have the money to pay their taxes. We owe them a return on their investment in us. And he said, I believe we're doing that. We have an obligation to try to do things that create jobs. We have an obligation to try to create things that make life easier. Okay? This month, because this month just started. During this month, he and his group are going to publish a big paper in Science magazine. It will come out in print sometime this month. And it's going to tell you about a revolutionary way of doing something that most of you will have heard about by now. Revolutionary. From 17 hours to 6 minutes to get something done. From being able to do things with sort of a crude match with the plans to an almost perfect match with plans. Doing things with a 70% waste to a less than 2% waste. Within a week, he is going to be one of the headline speakers at TED International in Vancouver, TED 2015. So the big TED talks that you've heard about, he is one of the keynote speakers. And what he's doing, publication comes out in Science. Within a week, he goes and gives a TED talk on that. And then, within a week after that, his company launches the product line to be able to do the things that he says. Here's the idea, and here's the science behind it. Here's what it can do. And now, if you want one, here's where you can buy one. He's got a company in California. He's built a company in the Bay Area in Silicon Valley, and they're producing these things now. The whole thing is launched this month. He came to Richmond on Friday of last week, swore us all to secrecy, and basically practiced the TED Talk. Can't do it. I promised him to his face we wouldn't give the details until after this month.
Did you order one? Did you order one?
Not yet. But the university probably will. Listen again to what the guy says. The taxpayers of this country have invested in us. We have a moral obligation to give them a return on their investment. When I listen to this line, Amos is focused on social injustice. And I think what churches across America have done, what this church has done, you may not know it, what this church has done to turn its back on people who are trying to address social injustice within our city. What this church has done broke my heart the day they did this. You start to realize there's an issue here that needs to be talked about, and we're going to bring all that in. So that's the issue that's here. So we're in Amos, and I'm going to go back now to...
Well, you said something about breaking your heart. What broke your heart?
Aaron Graham grew up in this church, and he wanted our church to sponsor him and what he was doing in Washington, D.C., and our church said no. He is tainted he's worried about social justice, and they have too many people who watch Glenn Beck and have said, don't want to have anything to do with that. Our church refused to sponsor him.
You don't even mean financially. It was just,
all we had to do was sign a paper. Sign a paper to say, we like what this kid is doing. And our church would not do that. Our church would not do that.
What's he doing that our church would not?
He has three different churches in Washington, D.C., reaching 39 or 40 language groups, building churches that are looking at everything. They're looking at human trafficking. They're looking at adoption of interracial babies. They're looking at the whole social infrastructure of Washington. Obama had him at one of the big plenary meetings talking about social issues within the last 2 months. If you go in the hallway of the choir room, there's a big article in the Richmond paper about him. And our church said we will not endorse him.
The problem was, in his past history, he had had relationships with a person that...
He worked for a person that Glenn Beck on his show said, this is awful. If you ever hear anybody say the words social justice in your church, get out of that church, go to another church. Sojourners was the group. You hear anybody talk about that, walk away. He learned a lot from Sojourners, and what Sojourners has done is debatable, but there comes a point where you notice what's going on and you do something about it, or you don't. And I don't want to go any further into this because I want to see what the Bible has to say. But when I say that particular one, and when I tell you what DeSimone said, that one hit me really hard. I see a moral obligation for us to give the taxpayers of the United States a return on their investment in us. And we're doing this. He said that, and this is true, when you apply in a proposal for a National Science Foundation grant, there's a section you have to fill out that says, what difference is this going to make to the life of the average American? And he says, most of my colleagues struggle with filling that in. We struggle because we got too much to say. We've done enough things already. It's hard to condense it down just to fit that block. Okay, so here we go. When did this happen? I'm still looking at verse 1. When did this happen? When did God give him these visions that led him on this? When did this happen?
The reign of Messiah.
Keep going. 2 years before the earthquake. Do you know we had an earthquake last week?
Yeah.
Did you feel it?
No.
Neither did I. We're not going to date things by that earthquake. But out in California, they're going to date things by the Northridge earthquake. We're going to date things by 9/11. We're going to date things by Pearl Harbor. Big cataclysmic things, often bad things, you date them by then. There apparently was an earthquake. Would you please pause for a moment and turn to chapter 4. If I can find it. Chapter 4, verse 11. I want to take this completely out of context. Don't look at the context. Just look at the words of chapter 11, verse 4. How does it say? Chapter 4, verse 11. What does it say?
I overthrew some of you as I overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. You were like a burning stick snatched from the fire, yet you have not returned to me.
A lot of people think I have overturned you as a reference to that earthquake. One of our members in the first hour was living in California. He was driving across the Bay Bridge when an earthquake hit. The bridge rippled like this. He went into the air on a 5-lane bridge. He went into the air in this lane and came down in this lane because the bridge was going this way as well. I overturned you. It says, go to chapter 9, verse 5. Once again, out of context. Chapter 9, verse 5. Once again, out of context. What does it say? The Lord God, the Lord of hosts, he touches the earth and it melts. And all living things on it lament. Whatever that earthquake was, it seems like there's at least a touch point or two within the book where he's looking back and reminding people, what did you feel like when you saw God's power? What was your attitude at that time? Now, again, this we've done a little bit of last week. We're going to do it again today. This is primarily for you. I want you to take a look at verse 3 of chapter 1. Go to verse 1. Go to chapter 1 and look at verse 3. It depends on the translation whether you get something that's close to a literal translation or something that is close to a content translation. Here is what a literal translation sounds like. For the three crimes the four crimes of Damascus, I have made my decree and will not relent. Here is a somewhat more informative translation. The people of Damascus have sinned again and again, and I will not let them go unpunished. I want you to look at that first phrase. The people of Damascus have sinned again and again. Come down to verse 4. What's the first phrase? You can see the word therefore implied. What does it say? I'm going to send fire. Now, let's pause for just a minute. Where's Damascus? Damascus is the capital city in Aram, and it's along that trade route. So, there's Damascus, number one. It's along that trade route. Skip down, if you will, to verse 6. And let's agree on the wording. The people of so-and-so have sinned again and again. What does it say?
Chapter 1,
verse 6.
Gaza.
The people of?
Gaza.
Gaza is somewhere like here. Capital city of Philistia.
Where John grew up.
Capital city of the Philistines.
Gaza, right?
That's where you grew up.
I hear our expert saying Gaza, not Gaza.
Is it
Gaza?
No, it can be.
Gaza?
Either way.
Yeah.
Gaza is what I've always said. Gaza is what's going to come out if I don't
that
think
works.
About it. Okay. What does it say in verse 7?
Send fire.
Send down fire. Verse 9. What does it say?
Tyre is up here somewhere on the coastline. That's number 3.
People of Tyre sinned again and again. Verse 10. I'll send down fire. Verse 11. The people of?
Edom. Here's Edom down here.
Have sinned again and again. That was verse 10. Verse 11. I'm sorry, that was verse 11. Verse 12. I'll send down fire. Verse 13.
Here's number 5. People of Ammon have sinned again and again. Next verse.
Maybe it's 2 verses. I'm going to light a fire. Doesn't say send fire. This time it's slightly differently worded. But
kindle a fire.
Okay. Chapter 2, verse 1.
The people of
Moab.
Moab. Here's number 6. Moab. What have we got so far? We're almost all the way around.
That was verse 2 was Moab. Verse 1 was Moab. Verse 2, I'll send down fire. Does everybody see that? Verse 4.
Judah. We just finished the circle. He didn't go in order around the circle, but he's gone all the way around the circle.
All the way around this middle part. What does it say in verse 5? I'll send down fire. Verse 6. People of Israel have sinned again and again. Okay. Back up to chapter 1, verse 3. How many verses about Damascus and therefore Aram? Quickly.
3.
Gaza? 3. Tyre? 2. Edom? 2. Ammonites? 3. Moab? 2. Maybe 3, I guess 3. Judah, 2. How about Israel? About 80, maybe 100. He's reached his focus. I want to help you with this just a little bit. Amos is within a short period of time of Isaiah. And the dates are not the dates of their birth. It's the dates of when they were thought to be active. Okay? You remember Isaiah's call? The call of Isaiah. The call of Amos was in the first verse. God sent him visions, called him to go. Right. Call of Jonah was in the first or second verse. Where's the call of Isaiah? Do you remember? About chapter 6. What happens before that? He points his finger at everything wrong in his country. Reaching a culmination, I think, at the end of chapter 4 and all of chapter 5, of pointing and saying, woe to those who do this, woe to those who do that. And he does that 6 times. And then chapter 6 starts, And it says, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and lifted up on his throne, and I said, woe is me, because I'm a man of unclean lips, and I dwell among people of unclean lips, and I have seen the Lord. And immediately, God calls him. Who can we send me? You remember that? Until the pharaoh turned around and pointed back, Isaiah wasn't ready. Do you notice how Amos is leading them through something like that? Woe to these, woe to these, woe to these, woe to these. When you get through, you've gone all the way around. And then Amos says, woe to you. And brings that finger back inside.
Okay. Were there Israelites living in all of those various places from the past history? Or were they other cultures?
I picture these as separated cultures and separated nations. There probably would have been a few people living over there who came from here. But most of that. So this is Israel across here. And I can't put it there. I'm going to put it across here. What's the capital city of Israel?
Jerusalem.
Nice try. That's of Judah. That's the southern kingdom. What's the capital city of the northern kingdom?
Judea.
Nope. That's still Judah. Judea is what we call it when it comes to the time of Jesus. It's called Samaria.
What is Samaria?
And it's probably not perfectly placed, but it's close to right. Okay, so far? Now, when you start looking at where Amos goes as he gets into, starting at chapter 2, verse 6, when he begins to get into his comments that the Lord has given him about Israel, one of the things that you see him doing is you see him specifically focusing on the shrine or the worship center at Bethel. And so I want to show you this next little part. Right about there is Mizpah. Right about here is Bethel. And right about there is Shiloh. Those were the three ancient places where when they first came in, some of the shrines, some of the altars there went back to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. But these were the sort of three worship centers. Before Jerusalem was captured and before Solomon built the temple in Jerusalem, these worship centers were here. Now, we're way past Solomon building the temple. We're way past that. But these, there's a memory there. Now, when the northern and southern kingdoms split, it was right after Solomon's death. So Solomon has built the temple in Jerusalem so that the worship center now focuses on Jerusalem. But then the two kingdoms split. The northern kingdom is now led by Jeroboam, and the southern kingdom by Solomon's son Rehoboam. And Jeroboam says, if I'm not careful, all of my people in this northern kingdom are going to go back to Jerusalem to worship, and they're going to reunify the country. And I don't want that to happen. So he built an altar at Bethel, or actually probably just added on to what was already at Bethel. He offered a worship place. And he set up an object for them to worship. Do you remember what this was? A golden calf. When have the people of Israel ever worshipped a golden calf before? They're coming out of Egypt. They've come to Mount Sinai. God has spoken to the people. The people are so frightened and so disturbed that they say to Moses, you go find out what he wants, and whatever he says to do, we'll do it. Moses goes up on the mountain. He's gone for 40 days and 40 nights. And while he's up on the mountain, here they are back here. And what happens? Aaron takes some of their gold. And as he says it to Moses later, I threw it in the furnace and look what came out. That's almost a literal translation. I threw it in the furnace. Look what came out. What came out? A golden calf. And the people worshipped it. Jeroboam put up a golden calf at Bethel and said, here is your God. And they worshiped. And Amos is coming in some years later. But the focus of his criticism is the northern kingdom. And the focus there is on the worship practices. So let me remind you, what was his focus? Corrupt city life, social injustice, deceit in politics and in religion, and insincerity in both civil action and in religious acts. And the focus of that insincerity and the deceit in religion is focused on Bethel. Are we okay so far? All right. So it's time now to go back and look again at chapter 1, verse 3. And what I want to do is walk through these seven and find out what was the crime, or what were the crimes for which God condemned them. For the sins, for the three sins, for the four sins of Damascus, I've made my decree and I will not relent. Or, the other translation says, the people of Damascus have sinned again and again. I will not let them go unpunished. Here's why. Why? What did they do to cause this response on God's part?
Mine says they threshed Gilead with implements of sharp iron.
Gosh. I mean, if you're going to plow something, don't you want an iron plow? That's a whole lot better than wooden plows. Or at least put some iron on the cover. What's wrong with what they were doing? It doesn't say plow. What does it say?
Thresh.
It says thresh. When you're threshing, what are you doing?
Nothing separating.
You bring it in the harvest. Maybe separating the grain from the other thing, right? Okay, this is a metaphor. What's the metaphor? What should you and I think to make this parallel? And my answer is tanks. You need to be looking at that and thinking tanks. They are talking about warfare of a cruelty and a violence that can hardly be described.
It says it here. Heads of grain were threshed by driving a wooden sledge fitted with sharp teeth over the cut grain.
And what they did was to draw the instruments of war across the people. Okay, there's something coming. I didn't mention this in the first hour. I'll mention it to you. That'll give you time to forget it before it actually comes up again. What does the word decimate mean? If a people has been decimated during war, what does that mean? No, that is not what it means.
It's greatly reduced.
It does not mean greatly reduced. This surprises you. This surprises you. It means 1 in 10 have died. I think at the Alamo they lined up people and said, okay, every 10th one. They did so. Well, maybe it wasn't the Alamo, maybe it was someplace else. That's decimation is 1 in 10 dies. What you're going to find out in here is 1 in 10 survives. Decimation is not nearly strong enough to talk about what has happened. And he's accusing Damascus of doing that. This is Aram. They've been sending raiding parties down in here all this time. Naaman was the leader of the forces of Aram for a while. When we talked about Naaman and leprosy last week. So far, okay? What were the crimes of Gaza? You know where to look now. Take a quick look, show me.
They took captive whole communities and sold them to Edom.
They took captive whole communities. Mine said entire nations. I suspect yours is closer to capturing this. You capture a whole town's worth of people and sell them into slavery. What's ISIS doing right now? Worse than that. They capture a whole community and then behead them all, it looks like.
They're doing it all, I think.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They just wipe them all out.
No, I mean, they're selling them too.
Oh, that's right. And certainly Boko Haram. I mean, these are headlines. These are headlines here, guys. They have deported entire nations as slaves. Slaves to who?
Edom.
To Edom, one of the others. Let's go to Tyre. Tyre. What was the crime, or what were the crimes? What were the sins of Tyre?
She did the same
thing. Mine says hosts of captives. My first one said entire nations. This one says hosts of captives. Handed them over to?
Edom.
Boy, Edom sounds like the bully of the place.
Where is Edom now?
Edom's gone.
It's in the Jordan area. Jordan.
It would be inside of the borders of Jordan. Petra, I think, is the capital. Is that what I remember? That John, do you, is that right?
Yes.
That Petra Which actually is the cover picture for my iPad. I see it every time I let this.
This one, mine, it says they broke their treaty with Israel.
Yeah, and I think.
Their brother Israel.
Yeah, I think we need to stay. That's with Tyre. Let's stay with Tyre for just a moment. They've handed over hosts of captives to Edom, heedless, mine says, of a covenant of brotherhood. But I think if you hear the word treaty, they broke a treaty, I think you're closer to it. I think that's a closer translation. Does this sound modern? You bet. And America's guilty of some of this too. What we've done with the Native Americans falls into some of this.
I think before you tied that to Esau, when they were saying their brother.
Yeah, let me just mention this. There's places in the Bible where it says, and remember, Edom is Esau. Edom is Esau. Edom is Esau. Who was Esau?
Jacob's
brother. So the lineage of Jacob's brother, that's Edom in this time. And the lineage of Jacob, that's Israel in this time. So these are cousins. These are cousins. And the fascinating thing is, you come on down to our day, all the tension and the turmoil between Arabs and Jews is still echoing some of this. Okay, so let's get to Edom, verse 11. Edom has sinned over and over again. I'll send down fire, but in between, what does he say? Why is this happening?
Pursued his brother with the sword.
And then look at the next three things. What's the first one? Your mind says stifled any sense of pity. What's the second one?
Anger toward perpetually.
Listen to this one. Perpetually nursed his anger. I think that one's clear. And then the third one?
Very blamed unchecked.
Mind says cherished his rage. Now let's put these together. Stifled any sense of pity, nursed his anger perpetually, and constantly cherished his rage. Put yours alongside of that. Pick the way you want to finally put it. I won't tell you. This is the one I'm reading here. I'm reading Amos 1, verse 11. Amos 1, verse 11. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm reading from the Warthog translation. It says out here.
Dude, I think just because it says, pursued his brother with the sword, slaughtered the winds of the land. So, not hearing that slaughter.
Well, you haven't come to the next one yet. Take a look at the Ammonites. What did the Ammonites do to raise God's wrath? Disemboweled the pregnant women. For what reason? What was their purpose in doing this? That's genocide. That's genocide. What about Moab? What did they do?
He burned alive the bones of the king of Edom.
Yeah, Barbara's translation was read in the first hour, and that was very interesting. Read that one, Barbara.
They desecrated the tombs of the kings of Edom with no respect for the dead.
I think that's better.
I mean, that's worse. Do you see where their ISIS is coming from? This is, they're killing, going to the museums.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. All false gods were tearing up all of these.
That's so sad. Their history.
Exactly. What did the people do? What did Moab do that got the punishment? They desecrated the tombs. And again, pretty close to some of the things that ISIS and Boko Haram and some of those are doing. What did Judah do? Mine says despised. Yours says rejected. There's a verse in Isaiah when he's talking about the crucifixion of Jesus. He was despised and rejected of men. Those two words.
Hardened their hearts.
Been led astray by false gods.
Falsehoods which their ancestors followed have led them astray. The word falsehoods in my translation is capitalized. And now he's ready to come to Israel. I have a sense that if he's preaching, the people of Israel might not have seen it coming. Woe to those, woe to those, woe to those. Yay, 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 yay. Woe to you. What? I got a feeling that's what happened. Now we've got an interesting problem right here. The interesting problem is, this is the point where I ran out of time in the first hour. So consequently, this is going to be the time I run out of time in here. If you want to know more about what happens, there's two things you can do. What's the first one?
Read
the rest of the book, starting with
chapter 2,
verse 6. And what's the second thing?
Come
back next week.
Or
listen to the tape. Yeah. Or listen to the tape. See if you can find it. Still not perfectly stable. I need it. That's a 5-pound weight down there. I think I need a 10, but that's okay. Yeah, this is pretty hard to move now. Okay, let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you for the lesson that we've been brought to today. We thank you for the men of courage who were able to say the things that needed to be said to the people who needed to hear them. And we realize there's courage that it takes to do that. Help us be courageous when opportunities come that you send us into a place where we need to speak. And we trust you for the words we would say, because you promised us that you would give us the words when we need them. I pray your blessings on this good place and a blessing on those folks who are here. Keep us safe, keep us in the center of your will, and bring us back together next week if that's your will. For we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.